Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. You know, we've been talking about some very, very serious topics over the last few days. But this morning, I saw a really sick story in the New York Post. And you say, well, why are you going to talk about it? I'll tell you why in a minute. But listen to the headline. Rockland rabbi found guilty of molesting daughter faces 50 years behind bars. Listen to this. A Hasidic rabbi, they're the most orthodox, from Rockland County was found guilty today of molesting his daughter and now faces 50 years in prison. Israel Weingarten, 59, was convicted in Brooklyn Federal Court of all five counts of transporting the now 27-year-old victim in and out of the country to commit sexual crimes against her. You see, the feds claim that he molested his daughter in Rockland and on trips to Israel and Belgium. Oh, it's disgusting. Acting as his own lawyer, Rabbi Weingarten, I love the word rabbi, which means teacher, Rabbi Weingarten delivered a rambling one-and-a-half-hour closing argument to the jury on Tuesday, who at times during the trial appeared repulsed by his cross-examination of the victim, that's his daughter, and other family members. During the trial, Weingarten said his daughter had a relationship with a married man in Belgium that led her to fabricate the charges against him. After the verdict this afternoon, his daughter, who has not been named by the New York Post because she's a victim of a sex crime, said her father asking her questions while she was on the stand was like being molested again. She added, I wish he wasn't my father. Now, the feds claim Rabbi Weingarten sexually abused his daughter, now age 27, starting in 1990 when she was only 9. Prosecutors said the abuse lasted until she was 16, and it took the jury just a day to believe that Weingarten committed the crimes. The trial has split the city's Satmar community, one faction believing the victim, and others claiming she's a liar. This is a really, really sick story. It shows that, you know, sickos can hide behind religion, you know. But what's interesting to me is that HBO will ridicule Christians in the form of Mormons, but they never criticize other religions. Isn't it interesting how the Hollywood vermin will attack Mormons and other Christians, but never, ever make mockery of Jews or Muslims or Buddhists or Hindus? Now, of course, they shouldn't mock any religion. But as you well know, there's only one religion that takes it, and that's the dominant religion in America. I wonder why. But, you know, you look at a story like this. You look at it and it says, Rockland rabbi found guilty of molesting daughter. And, you know, I could just hear voices in my head. If I got to see him, I could say, you sicko, how could you do a thing like that? I hear him saying to me, listen, Madoff went for the money, I went for the honey. What's the big deal? The money or the honey? I took the honey, he took the money. What's the big deal here about 50 years? For little honey. It just shows that sickos can hide behind religion. They can hide behind no religion. They can hide behind who knows what they can hide behind. Anyway, there are far more important stories. Welcome to the Savage Nation. Let's have the opening again. One piece of the opening anyway. As the folks call 1-800-449-8255, we'll have a little, that's a little opening music on the Savage Nation. That was a precursor to the program today, where we'll talk about very serious problems, I guess. That's it. It's open. No one called. They don't know what to say. They're flabbergasted. If I had talked about Obama signing a budget that broke the bank after promising no earmarks, stuffing earmarks till they fall out on the floor, if I started to talk about Nancy Pelosi bossing around the U.S. Air Force to fly her and her family around America, I'm sure that people would certainly want to talk about it. Now, you got to listen to this clip 12. Here's Obama double talking on earmarks in clip 12.
Now, yesterday Congress sent me the final part of last year's budget, a piece of legislation that rolls 9 bills required to keep the government running into one. a piece of legislation that addresses the immediate concerns of the American people by making needed investments in line with our urgent national priorities. That's what nearly 99% of this legislation does.
Yeah, sure.
The nearly 99%
pays for bureaucratic deadbeat to work for you.
What you likely have heard about is that this bill does include earmarks.
Yeah.
Now, let me be clear.
Sure.
Done right, earmarks have given legislators the opportunity to direct federal money to worthy projects that benefit people in their districts, and that's why I've opposed their outright elimination.
What a liar. I mean, come on, how much can you take? How much can you take? Here's a guy who ran on a platform of eliminating earmarks. I remember during the campaign, he even trapped me for a minute when he said, I will go through the new budget line by line, and I'll make sure that not one single earmark gets passed. I mean, how can you people look at yourself in the mirror? I just don't know how you can do this. I really don't understand it. I really don't understand how people can. I don't want to use the word liberal or this or that. How could you people who support this guy not see what he really is? You know what I mean? It's unbelievable to me. They're all the same, these politicians. They're all the same. By the way, where is Henry Paulson? Does anybody know where our former Treasury Secretary, the man who bailed out his friends in investment banks to the extent of $700 billion or a trillion or $3 trillion, no one even knows what he did. The guy who basically took $3 trillion of taxpayer money under George Bush and dispersed it to his friends in the banking and investment banking community. You remember Henry Paulson, the guy who played Elmer Fudd? Does anybody know where Henry Paulson is? Does anyone see him? There used to be a joke, you know, where has the judge gone? Where has the Treasury Secretary gone? Where is he living? Is he in Brazil on a beach? Or is he working for a Goldman Sachs again? If anyone knows, I mean, I suggest you call the Savage Nation. What I'm going to do is take calls on all the topics that are up there in your mind, from Annette Bening becoming a mouthpiece for the Hitler of our time, which we played yesterday, which was just sickening. To see that Annette Bening would come back from Iran, where there is no freedom, to come back from a country that bashes homosexuality, kills homosexuals, bashes all other religions, to think that Sid Gannis, president of the Academy, and that Annette Bening would come back and glorify the Iranian government like this, I told you, reminded me of what was done in the 1930s by a New York Times reporter named Durant, who came back from Russia and denied that there was any starvation, denied that there was any famine in Russia, and said that Joseph Stalin was doing a superb job in Russia. Now, people who understand history know who he was. He was a dupe of the Stalinist era, just as most Hollywood idiots seem to be dupes of the radical left-wing fascistic establishments around the world. Now, the question is, why is Obama so close to these Hollywood left-wingers? Why is Obama sending Annette Bening to Iran? Why did last month Obama and Joe Biden, whoever he is, meet with George Clooney, who briefed them on the situation in Darfur? Why did Nancy Pelosi do a press conference with the pet, Brad Pitt, who has to be the biggest human handbag in America? Brad Pitt is like a walking handbag. You know, I got to tell you something. I loved him as an actor years ago. I think he was in the movie about World War I. I thought he was a superb actor. Since then, I've never been impressed with his acting at all. But the guy looks like a pet of whatever her name is, Angela Jolie. Is that her name? The guy looks like a pocketbook with eyes. That's what he looks like to me. He doesn't have a word to say, but Nancy Pelosi fell all over herself. Who made these Hollywood idiots proxies for policymakers and for diplomats? Who in the world elected these people to represent this country? This is the Savage Nation. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. The website is michaelsavage.com. We'll begin with some callers. Montana, Anthony, go ahead. You're on the Savage Nation.
Yes, Mike. I've traveled into communist Romania shortly after the fall with Ceausescu, and I did some work there. And I met with Peter Dugulescu, who was one of the elected parliament leaders for two terms after that,
right,
with democracy. And in my times in Bucharest, I was talking to some people that interface also with the government. And I asked them a question just out of curiosity, because we had a lot of time to sit and talk at different times. And I said, do you think communism will ever come back to Romania?
Wait a minute, is it common what?
Communism. Will it ever come back to Romania? And that was a question I asked him. He goes, no, communism won't come back to America, I mean, to Romania the way it was. It's going to come back the same way that communism is coming to your country. It's going to come with that form. That's what we're going to have here again.
Right. We've called it on this show, I call it neo-Marxism, but there are many different ways to describe what Obama's doing to us. But make no mistake about it, Obama didn't come, Obama's not a, didn't appear on the scene out of nowhere. He was put here by worldwide socialist forces to break the hegemony of America and roll us into the New World Order. There is no question in my mind that money men behind him want to destroy this self-regulating democracy that we have. They want to break this republic over their filthy, dirty, golden knees. And I am telling you as I sit here, this is happening right before our eyes. Obama is merely a puppet of these people. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I can give you another point. I mean, I've been trying to get in for a couple of days. You know, a while back we had all these communiques coming over from Osama bin Laden. One of them that he made early on was that he was going to destroy America by bringing it down financially, collapsing it. And just putting a few points together, I mean, it's amazing to me that the first executive order he releases the Guantanamo Bay people. Then, I mean, we can start lining up all the things he's doing. He's taking
How many executive orders has Obama passed in 60 days?
Well, there's
17. 17. No president in history has ever ruled by executive order to this extent. He's ruling like a dictator. And yet he's getting away with it. Do you know why? Because he bought off the Republicans who are acting like cheap pimps in a rotten house of ill repute in southern Texas in the 1930s. You know, if I read you the amount of money that was given to Mitch McConnell, your hair would stand up, but it explains how Obama is getting away with it. He's buying off the opposition. We have no opposition in this country. You know that as well, don't you, Anthony?
Yes, very much so. Mike, I've been listening to you for years. I'm a little concerned for you because you get really excited, and I love it, and it's good for you, but, you know, I'm just take care of yourself. I'm sure everybody else would feel the same way.
Well, there's nothing I can do about my emotions and my temper. I am who I am, you know. God promises us what they promised, 3 score and 10. Isn't that the number?
Well, thank you, Michael. I really
thank you for the call. 3 score and 10, it means I'm out of business in a few. I don't like that 3 score part of it. 3 score and 10, I thought they lived for a long time in the Bible, from all that olive oil and all of the multiple wives and everything. But apparently, even with the olive oil and all the wives, they only had 70 years to look forward to. Whatever. They got to eat more of the calamari and the zuppa and more garlic. I don't know if they had that down in those days in the desert. I'll be right back.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. Thanks for being a loyal listener. It's amazing to me. I told you I'm in Area 53. We'll get to all the news of the day in a minute. I mean, the calls are jammed out. Normally, I broadcast from the West Coast. Right now, I'm visiting the East Coast. I told you that in a hidden location, Area 53, I think. And I got to tell you, the time change is very interesting. And you come to understand a different pace when you realize the time it starts is so different around America. It really changes the mood and the pace of the program. It doesn't change the content. You know, it's still me. I'll tell you more about that in a minute. We're talking about Obama and his neo-Marxist administration and how the American people are being duped because there is no Republican opposition to speak of. The only opposition that you're seeing to Obama is coming from talk radio, which is why they want us out of business, from some Democrats who realize that they're not going to get reelected, from some of the so-called swing states. They're not going to get reelected. You're going to see, by the way, a bloodbath against Democrats during the next election. They're going to be thrown out of office. I just don't know if there's going to be enough time to save the administration at that point from themselves, nor do I care, because I don't know how we're going to get this country back on track with a guy like this who is running, in essence, a kingship, 17 executive orders since he became president. No American president has ever ruled by fiat. This man is trying to do so. So let's take your callers here on the Savage Nation. I also asked, where is Henry Paulson, the man who bankrupted America? Chicago Mark says he knows. Mark, where's Paulson?
Hi, Michael. Pleasure to talk to you. Henry Paulson has a very lovely palatial estate in the town of Barrington Hills, Illinois, which is a very well-to-do suburb of Chicago.
Oh, he's resting the spoils of war?
Yes, he is. Yes,
well, you know, I read that he did so well that his son, Paulson, it says, scores a goal with soccer agreement. Did you hear about that story?
I did.
Yeah. It says that Merritt Paulson, the son of the former Treasury Secretary, Old Hank, just signed a $129 million plan to bring Major League Soccer to Portland. Where'd the money come from?
It comes from us. It always comes from us. It will always come from us.
Ah, isn't that interesting? You know, it's nice to have a job like this for the government. I love to hear that bureaucrats do it for the good of the people. It's a nice thing to see that it's not true. It's good to see that actually they're driven by capitalist greed. Of course, I'm saying that sarcastically. You know, I think Paulson is a criminal. I believe Paulson should be tried as a criminal for bankrupting America, for spending money without reporting where the money went. And I think that Hank Paulson should be tried after Madoff is tried. What do you think about that, Mark? Does that work for you?
I think that's a great idea. You know what, Michael? I'd love to take a picture of his house and email it to you guys. So you
I'm not going to post it because I respect people's privacy, even people who I dislike. However, I believe Hank Paulson, because he would not disclose who got the money, when they got the money, what they did with the money way back. Remember when this was going on from October through November, what he was doing with our money, our taxpayer money? And then every time they would try to nail him, where is the money going? You go, ba ba boo 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 ba bee ba 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 boo ba 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 bee. Remember that?
Keep them all confused and rob the bank. That's how this works.
So he's reclining at his estate in Michigan. Is that it?
In Barrington Hills, Illinois.
Isn't that nice? And his son now has got a soccer league, moving it to Portland. It's good to see that capitalism pays. It's very good. Thank you very much. I really appreciate that. It's nice to see that the public servants are in it for the service. I love when I hear that they're not in it for themselves. I love that they're public servants. Don't you love the word public servants? Basically, the guys who either are so smart that they can steal from the Treasury without getting caught, or they're so incompetent that they basically need earmarks to keep them afloat. You know what I'm saying? And we're the rest of the poor people. We're the poor people.
Savage.
This bill does include earmarks. Now, let me be clear. Done right, earmarks have given legislators the opportunity to direct federal money to worthy projects that benefit people in their districts, and that's why I've opposed their outright elimination.
That's all. Well, that makes sense after you've gotten what you wanted. So let's look at some of the earmarks. $238,000 for the Polynesian Voyaging Society in Honolulu for Daniel Inouye. That makes sense. Now, here's another job creator. $381,000 for jazz at Lincoln Center for Gerald Nadler's district. Well, that'll create jobs. I mean, there's at least one saxophonist that was going to be employed by that one. $143,000 for Las Vegas Natural History Museum. Well, that should create jobs for sand fleas. $951,000 earmark in a sustainable development, whatever that means, sustainable development in Las Vegas for Harry Reid's sponsors. I don't know what sustainable development would be in Las Vegas. $713,000 earmark for a biomass project in New York for Chuck Schumer. That should create a lot of jobs. I guess you need people to shovel biomass into a landfill. There's two or three illegal aliens that are going to get a job out of that one. But apparently the so-called conservatives, the Republicans, were bought off at even higher dollars. Senator Richard Shelby, remember all of his huffing and puffing? To buy him off, he got $114 million in earmarks. How about Thad Cochran, senator from Mississippi? He pretended he was against all of this. They bought him off for $75 million for his constituents. How about Senator Mitch McConnell, who looks like a puppet or a puppeteer? He put up a big front last week, didn't he? Old Mitchie McConnell, Republican Kentucky, got $51 million for his constituents. And, of course, the backstabbing turncoat Arlen Specter got $25 million for his constituents. So it doesn't really matter whether you're talking Democrat or Republican, Republican or Democrat. It's a broken, corrupt system. So that's the whole story. 1-800-449-8255. MichaelSavage.com is the website. Let's go to Kurt in Chicago, who disagrees about Hank Paulson. Go ahead, please, Kurt.
Hello, Mike. I think you, I mean, I'm not saying you got Hank Paulson totally wrong, but he made all his money working for Goldman Sachs, and he didn't even want the job to be
Wait. We know that he made a lot of money working for Goldman Sachs. He was CEO, and then he came to work for Bush as Treasury Secretary. My concern is why he would not disclose where the $3 trillion went while he was Treasury Secretary. Where'd the money go?
Well, where the money went was what they didn't want to tell the public is that our banking system was bankrupt. And basically,
Wait a minute. He wouldn't even disclose which banks got the money. Why is that, Kurt?
All the banks that were underwater, that were clogging up, just freezing credit, had to be their liabilities were more than their assets.
But, Kurt, we live in an open society, not a closed society. We don't live in a communist state where the government has the power to control information. They shouldn't have that power. So I disagree with you. The object is for the American people to know where their tax money went, number one, and make their own decisions. But second from that, what about these gargantuan bonuses that were given out to failing banks while they were going down and lying to the people, and they were bailed out by Paulson anyway? Don't you think that's of concern to you?
Well, I definitely agree with you on that. But basically where the money went, though, was paying off all the liabilities. And if you're worried about the government, like, telling us the truth, I mean, they haven't told us the truth since they told us Lee Harvey shot Kennedy.
No, and see, now you were covering it up with it's always been a lie. I don't agree with you. Not at a time when there is such financial concern in the country do they get an opportunity to say, leave it to us. I disagree with you. You know, who shot this nonsense, that conspiracy theory is one thing. But hard cash is quite another. It's a simple question. Who got the money? What did they get the money for? Where did the money go? Was it used by the bank, or did they continue to fly in private jets and take golfing expeditions with 50 people? We have a right to know that, because I believe there are many people on Wall Street who should be in jail right now. I don't think you'd argue with that, but thanks for the call anyway. San Francisco Mark, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
A very subtle and scary appointment by Obama today was the Green Czar.
Another czar?
Yeah, Van Jones. You should know him.
I never heard of him. What's his background?
Cop Watch.
What?
He ran Cop Watch.
The guy who ran around the city of San Francisco with a video camera making police look like criminals?
Yeah, open socialist.
You are making this up.
Not
you make
up,
a
Mike.
Street vermin like him, a street rat like that, was made the Green Czar under Obama?
Mike, that's one of his biggest appointments, the Green Czar. It's very subtle.
And what will the Green Czar do, Mark? What's this vermin going to be doing?
Well, he's got a budget. I think it's $15 billion.
You're making this up. That street rat with a video camera is now the czar of all things green in America? The guy who harassed San Francisco police when they were doing their jobs? Why, you know the guy?
Let's just say we've had personal encounters. Or defending Mamiya Abu-Jamal, who killed...
The name of the position that Obama the Magnificent just appointed him to?
Well, in all the blogs that are lauding this degenerate, it's called the Green Czar.
Is this appointment firm? Has it been confirmed, or is it being talked about?
It's all over the media, and it says he has been tapped, whatever that means.
I think that there better be a campaign against this man as fast as possible. I think bloggers better disclose who he is and what he's done in his past before Obama pulls this fast one on the people.
I think it's a payback. It's some kind of acorn payback, because he's a community organizer guy.
Also, he got a lot of illegals to vote, I guess, in your opinion, and a lot of people to vote four times?
Yeah, I would say so.
So we've lost America, in other words, to the far left. And Obama's doing it with that kindly, nice, sonorous Kenyan voice of his. Is that it?
Just think of all the guys that charged up the beach in Normandy and gave their lives for this country. Just think of them every time you think of Obama.
No, I'd like to think of the San Francisco police who really care about borders, language, and culture, who are harassed by a woman who can't fire a gun, who they can't find a hat to fit on her head, who have to put up with vermin like him and other left-wing garbage every time they try to do their job. All I have to do is look at their faces and I know what's going on.
God bless, Mike.
I look at the police when I travel the country. These guys put their life on the line, despite what the vermin in Hollywood tell you. If it wasn't for the thin blue line, you'd be eaten alive tomorrow morning. If it wasn't for them putting their life on the line, you'd be eaten alive. They'd crawl through your bedroom window and kill you. They'd crawl through your bedroom window and rape your daughter and your wife if it wasn't for the police. But you keep hammering them. You keep putting them down. You keep making their life miserable. And you're going to see what kind of country you're going to be living in if you let this charlatan Obama get away with this. All right, I'm going to back off. I can't do anything about it. I've been telling you he's a neo-Marxist. I've been disclosing the corruption of Obama. I've been disclosing the fraud of Obama. I've been disclosing the people he's appointing. And there's nothing more I can do about it. Absolutely nothing. Now, if this last caller who just called this program is correct, then this character, Van Jones, was just appointed by the White House. They claim he is an environmental advocate, a civil rights activist, you know what that means, don't you? And an attorney. He's formerly based in Oakland, California, and he's founder of Green for All, a national NGO dedicated to building an inclusive green economy, strong enough to lift people out of poverty. You know what that means, don't you? Nothing. You understand all of that. In March of 2009, which is now, and I believe that's today, is that right? Yesterday? The White House Council on Environmental Quality, CEQ, announced Jones's appointment as special advisor on green jobs for the CEQ. What is a green job? A green job is hiring people who are not citizens to vote for Obama's minions. Another green job would be hiring people who are incapable of adding 3 and 4 and having them vote 10 times. Let me tell you something. I've done more for the environment than any of these green people I've ever met. These are not green advocates, in my opinion. These are hardcore radical Marxists using the environment as a weapon against America. That's my opinion. Mississippi Tom, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Corporate airplanes. I don't know what you have a problem with corporate airplanes. I flew corporate airplanes most of my life as well as airliners.
Wait, when have you heard me put down corporate airplanes?
Oh, you said one day, you said, I might get in the Gulfstream. Oh, if I fly in that Citation, I'm going to die.
I don't know what you're talking about. When did you hear me say I don't believe in corporate airplanes?
I believe it was last week when you said that you're knocking a Citation pilot versus a Gulfstream pilot. I'm rated in both airplanes.
Tom, are you dreaming? I never said that. I don't know what show you're listening to. Are you smoking dope or what?
I don't smoke dope.
You must be taking some kind of medication because I never said that. Where'd you go, Tom? Back to the Obama microphone? Okay, a crank caller. That's all. 1-800-449-8255. This is the Savage Nation. Let's go to Ann Arbor, Michigan. Will, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Good afternoon. I was calling concerning the whereabouts and activities of Secretary Paulson.
Yes.
It has been reported in the financial press, and I think there actually may have been something in Bloomberg, possibly today. It's been in Bloomberg previously, that Paulson is a principal or a partner in a hedge fund that has made hundreds of millions of dollars. The number in my mind is $450 million shorting the British banks.
So Paulson is a partner in Soros' hedge fund?
I didn't say Soros. He is a partner in.
Let's back up. Henry Paulson, the former Treasury Secretary, the man who did not disclose where the trillions of dollars that he took went. You're telling me he is now the president of a hedge fund, or he was?
I said he's a principal or a partner in a hedge fund. He's a major player in a hedge fund. This has been reported in Bloomberg, and these guys made...
Well, first of all, hedge funds are not illegal. But what I noted in doing some research about a month ago was that most hedge funds lost money last year, while one in particular made about 8%, and that was the Soros Fund. Can you figure out how Soros made money while the others lost it?
Well, I'm not entirely sure. I'm not sure. I wouldn't consider George Soros, the most ethical person on the face of the earth. But it's very interesting that Henry Paulson, who's the ultimate insider, and I'm sure would be privy to a lot of interesting information about what's going on in the world of finance. That's right.
If you're going to give a company or a bank $20, $30, $40 billion, and you tell your friends to invest in that company while the stock is hammered, wouldn't you think there'd be some profit in that? Now, we're not accusing Paulson of that, because that would be insider trading, and he'd be liable for prosecution. And we well know a man of that stature would never do that. Is that correct, Will?
Oh, certainly not.
Yeah, he would certainly not engage in that kind of behavior. That would be left to people who have vowels in their last name, right, Will?
That's right.
He's right. Only people with vowels in their last name would be capable of that kind of thing, not men from upstanding WASP backgrounds like Paulson. Thank you for the call. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation, the program that many of you are addicted to for obvious reason. And it is a good sounding board for dissent. And, you know, I don't joke when I say welcome to Dr. Dissent. I feel that we are dissent in America. And that's the mark of a healthy democracy. The day you hear dissent is illegal, you know you've lost your country. The day you hear that dissent is somehow un-American, you know you've lost your country. The day you hear a charlatan like Obama say that it's time to end talk radio, you know you've lost your country. The day you hear criminals with senatorial names in front of them tell you that they want a so-called fairness doctrine is the day you know that you've lost your country. The only thing you've got is us. The newspapers are gone. Now, you know, I want to talk about the newspapers for a minute for one reason. You see they're going out of business. It's actually a sad thing. I grew up on newspapers. We read today the Miami Herald sacks 175 people. That's 19% of its workforce. These are human beings, and they're going to slash the wages of its remaining staff. Even the San Francisco Chronicle, the worst newspaper in America with the most adolescent writers left in the country, had to strike a deal. Even the union, the rigid union that stood there like a bunch of fools while the paper was burning $1 million a day into the garbage. Even the union that runs the stupid Chronicle yielded, because they were told by the Hearst Corporation we're either going to cut costs or sell the paper or close it down. So all of the neo-Marxist fools who write for the Chronicle finally realized that even they had to, you know, come to terms. But the fact of the matter is, all we read is that this is because of the internet and because of falling advertising revenue and the weak economy. Now, all of those factors are true. There are other factors as to why the newspapers are going out of business, which I have to keep repeating. It's their editorial slant. Why would you, who listen to talk radio, buy a newspaper which bashes everything you believe in? Of course there's falling advertising revenue. Of course there's a weak economy. Of course people are migrating to free news online and free news from talk radio. That's all true. But I know I would buy a newspaper myself to this day. If I picked up a paper that reaffirmed my values as an American, I'd buy it. When have you last seen a newspaper in a machine that had something in it that you had to take home and show your wife or your children? Talking to the men now. When have you last seen in a newspaper that said, I am an American newspaper and I'm proud to be an American newspaper? Never. Not in years. So many years it's impossible. Oh, once in a while they make believe, you know, the fallen they celebrate in Iraq. That wasn't to glorify America. That was to show you the war is bad because men died defending freedom. That's the only reason they ever ran any of those sob stories. They weren't doing it to glorify troops. They were doing it to run an anti-war slant. And so, as I say, I grew up on newspapers. To me, it was a sacred, it was a big part of my life. And I remember the early days when I was a young teacher, tuna fish, toast, and the Times. The stained raincoat with the tuna fish stain, I had to take a sandwich to work. I'd go in the back of a coffee shop on a rainy day, I'd whip out the newspaper, I'd sit with a cup of tea, which is all I could afford to buy, and I'd read the paper. Those days are gone. They're gone for many reasons, but the main reason I'm talking about this at all is that it's the death of an era when you see that the McClatchy newspaper chain, which owns 30 papers, including the Miami Herald, the Sacto Bee, the Fort Worth Star-Telegram, and the Kansas City Star, and some 50 non-dailies, is fundamentally bleeding to such an extent that we don't know if the corporation itself will be in much business after this. The Miami Herald Daily is not only firing 90% of its workforce and slashing the wages of its remaining staff, but the publisher, David Landsberg, said that the remaining workforce will have to take 1 week off without pay as the newspaper seeks cost-cutting measures to deal with the nationwide loss of readership and revenues. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm not saying that I have a magic answer as to how to save a newspaper, but I can tell you right now, and I don't want to be in the newspaper business. People approached me years ago when the San Francisco Examiner was for sale. A man offered me a $1 million check. This was over 10 years ago to buy the newspaper. If I would be the editor, I said, I don't want it. He said, what? I said, no, I do radio. I can't do both correctly. See, I know my limitations. And I also know that this is a full-time job. I may be on only for a few hours a day, but you try it. You try it for 5 minutes and see what it takes to be, you know, focused and do it right. But the point is that the newspapers are dying not solely because of people leaving for the internet and for talk radio as a source of their news. They're dying because of their radical left-wing slant. And what impresses me is that even as these wobblies are going out of business, all of these sad writers for the papers, even as they're losing their very livelihood, they are so blind they don't even understand that they are the reason they're losing their livelihood. They're still in denial that it was their bias against America itself that drove them out of business. They still won't accept that this constant harping against the police taking the side of killers. Let's start with the daily newspaper. When I was a kid, the cop was the hero, the criminal was the criminal. And of course, that was true. So what? A few percent were rotten? What else is new? It's the human condition. Cops were heroes, criminals were criminals. Look what's happened today where they always assume the cop was the wrong guy. The soldier was sacred when I was a kid. Look what they did, turning our soldiers into something other than heroes in Iraq, questioning the reason that they even fire a shot, turning them into war criminals. Do I have to go down the line, the obsession with lesbian and gay, lesbian and gay, lesbian and gay, lesbian, 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 gay, 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 till the people said, you know what? Gay. Go ahead. Gay. Go. 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 I don't want to read it anymore. I'm not taking it home.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
I am signing an imperfect omnibus bill because it's necessary for the ongoing functions of government, and we have a lot more work to do. We can't have Congress bogged down at this critical juncture in our economic recovery.
Con man.
But I also view this as a departure point for more far-reaching change. In my discussions with Congress, we have talked about the need for further reforms to ensure that the budget process inspires trust and confidence instead of cynicism. So I believe as we move forward, we can come together around principles that prevent the abuse of earmarks.
Double talk. Yeah, but didn't he also say he wants to keep earmarks, guys? You want to play that clip for the American people listening to the Savage Nation? How about playing that one? Let's hear that one. That's an even better one.
This bill does include earmarks. Now, let me be clear.
Sure.
Done right, earmarks have given legislators the opportunity to direct federal money to worthy projects that benefit people in their districts.
Oh, sure.
And that's why I've opposed their outright elimination.
Double talker, liar. In other words, he lied to you. All of those of you who wanted hope and change, You wound up with probably the most corrupt Congress in American history. I don't know of another one. I mean, I study American history all my life. I have never seen a more drunken, corrupt Congress in my life. And I mean both sides of the aisle. $381,000 for jazz at Lincoln Center. That's going to create jobs for who? A saxophone player? $238,000 for the Polynesian Voyaging Society in Honolulu for Daniel Lanoi. What kind of jobs is that going to create? But wait, it gets worse on the other side of the aisle. To silence the Republicans, they got more money than the Democrats. Shelby, Republican Alabama, got $114 million. Thad Cochran, Republican Mississippi, got $75 million for his constituents. Mitch McConnell, the puppet, looks like a puppet, talks like a puppet, looks like Charlie McCarthy, put up a big front 2 weeks ago. He got $51 million for the Bluegrass State. And Arlen Inspector, the double-talk backstabber, got $25 million for Pennsylvania. So it doesn't really matter which party you're talking about at this point. The reason the system is like this is because both of them are corrupt, in my humble opinion. And it's only one man's opinion, that's all. Now, Obama says he wants to be very clear about earmarks, that he's keeping them because they're good. I'm going to read you something that came out minutes ago from the Associated Press. And I got to tell you something. I've noticed something going on recently that's really interesting. While the newspapers are going out of business, the Associated Press is doing its job more so than ever before. And they're not in Obama's pocket the way you might have thought they would be today. I think the Associated Press is doing a fabulous job. Here's a story from Steve LeBlanc, Associated Press, came out minutes ago. Fed spending millions on Kennedy legacy en masse. Listen to this story. More than one out of every $5 of the $126 million Massachusetts is receiving in earmarks from a $410 billion federal spending package is going to help preserve the legacy of the Kennedys. One out of $5 to glorify the Kennedy family. The bill includes $5.8 million for the planning and design of a building to house a new Edward M. Kennedy Institute for the Senate. Now, I don't know if that $5.8 million for the Ted Kennedy building will include a mock Chappaquiddick bridge and creek. That could explain the cost, and there could be a cost overrun, because I suspect that in order to create a mannequin that acts like Mary Jo Kopechne before she died and while she was drowning as the good senator swam and ran away, that alone could cost millions of dollars, and that could explain the high cost of this building to house a new Edward M. Kennedy Institute for the Senate. You know, it costs a lot of money to create human-like statues, particularly those that are drowning and screaming while the good senator was running away. The bill also includes $22 million to expand facilities at the John F. Kennedy Library. I don't understand that. And $5 million more for a new gateway to the Boston Harbor Islands on the Rose Kennedy Greenway, you see. A spokesman for Kennedy, age 77, said he hadn't requested the money for the Library Institute, and there are dozens of other earmarks in the spending bill for homeless services and community, blah, 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 blah. The $22 million JFK Library earmark was sponsored by fellow Mass Democrat and horse-faced Senator John Kerry, who was also a top sponsor for the money for the Kennedy Senate Institute. Kerry defended the library project, which he said is needed to upgrade the facility. And I won't read what he said because it's just double-speak. Local officials last year announced they were seeking up to $100 million to build the institute, which they said would focus on the Senate in general and blah, 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 blah. About $20 million has already been raised for the institute, including contributions from drug companies, insurance companies, and hospitals. Tentative plans called for a replica of the Senate chamber itself. Do you hear this? The excess we're watching makes the ancient Roman Senate look like a very conservative body compared to what these pork-laden pigs are doing to you. The list of earmarks provided by Kennedy, Kerry, and the state's all-Democratic congressional delegation highlights programs throughout the state, and I don't want to read the rest of them. Nothing has to do with jobs. Everything has to do with self-aggrandizement and cronyism. Critics led by Republican double-talker John McCain have denounced the 8,000 pet projects contained in the bill as pork. President Barack Hussein Obama signed the bill, which he said is imperfect. He said it must signal an end to the old way of doing business. But then if you listen to the kicker, listen to what Obama said. He will not end the earmarks. Listen.
This bill does include earmarks. Now, let me be clear. Done right, earmarks have given legislators the opportunity to direct federal money to worthy projects that benefit people in their districts, and that's why I've opposed their outright elimination.
Uh-huh. That's called doublespeak. Orwell warned us about a day like this. And Mama said there'd be a day like this, and boy, oh boy, Mama was right. Can we have Mama said there'd be a day like this? It's astounding that he's getting away with it. Every time I listen to Obama, I know he's a charlatan, an imposter, and a phony. I know it in my heart he's a phony. Now, I want to clear this up for a minute. Many of you are bigots, and you say that I don't like him because he's part black. Let me clear the air. He doesn't look like a president. He doesn't act like a president. He doesn't talk like a president. He doesn't walk like a president. Not because of his racial composition, but because of his actions. I never had a problem, for example, with Colin Powell, even though he is a very liberal politician. Never. The man had what it took to be the commander that he was. I never had a problem with Clarence Thomas, the Supreme Court Justice. Both of those men look and talk like men who can hold their own with anyone and who are in their positions because they're qualified to be so. Obama is a charlatan through and through. That's my opinion. He doesn't look like a president. He doesn't walk like a president. But most importantly, he does not act like a president. He acts like, well, let's let it go at that. I'll take your calls right now on the Savage Nation. Steve in New York on WOR. Thanks for holding. Go ahead, please.
Yes, what I wanted to say was that you confirm my belief every day at the fact that the country cannot be saved at this point. And I'd like to propose or ask you to have some kind of a panel that would discuss the inevitable demise of the country and what will happen after that.
Well, when we say it won't survive, Portugal is still a country, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Okay. When I first started in radio, I was criticized by the San Francisco Chronicle, who said Michael Savage said that America is becoming like Portugal. I said that in 1994 when I began to talk radio on a local station. Of course, America will still be here. There'll be a name called America. But it won't be the country that your father lived in. It will be a broken shadow of its former self, sort of like an old man that's hobbling around on two canes.
Actually, I believe that based on the quality of the people in the country, the loss of people due to abortions, the fact that many people are not having children will convert the quality of people, and there is no chance that the quality of people that we need...
Of course not. Look, all you got to do is look at Mexico, and you'll understand what America is going to look like in 20 years. One out of five kindergartners are of Hispanic descent. Now, there's nothing wrong with Hispanics. I've said that before. But when you consider most of the people who break into this country are illiterate peasants, who are illiterate in their own language. Do you understand what I mean by that? They don't even know how to read or write Spanish. Are you aware of that? They are illiterate in their own language. That is why the power structure wants more of them, so they can continue to rape us. Do you get it?
We get it, but I'm telling you, I believe everything you say every day, talking about it every day, is no longer having any impact on the country. The fact is, it's over. We should prepare for the inevitable. And you have an opportunity to put together a panel to discuss what we can do when we become the independent states of America instead of the United States of America.
Well, what do you mean by the independent states? You actually think we're going to break up and become four or five different nations?
Well, we're going to either balkanize, geographically go into quadrants, or have different...
Well, I've heard that discussed, and no one thought the Soviet Union would break up into the republics ever, and it came overnight. I understand it, but the difference between the ex-USSR and the current USS of A are so many that there's no comparison to be made whatsoever. First of all, the former Soviet republics, so to speak, each had separate languages and separate ethnic identities in many cases, and a history, no less, in those former Soviet republics. You can't argue that American states have the same kind of self-identity as former Soviet republics.
No, I'm not. But what I'm saying is that we need to, since I cannot get away from any impact of a federal senator or a federal congressman in another state, I have to understand that I have to break it apart so that I will live in a state that I would be able to vote on in my state and not be affected by a Ted Kennedy for 50 years affecting me in New York because I'm covered by the federal government.
So what is your point?
My point is that that you propose and have put together a panel that would discuss voluntary and completely nonviolent dissolution of the country eventually, that we will wind up going into the 50 independent
states. I think that you're living in a dream world. If you think that this group of corrupt, drunken senators is going to permit this country to break up into independent states, I think you're dreaming.
It's not going to be permitted. It's going to happen, just as all the other horrible things that
are
happening.
No, it's not going to happen. You're not one of those who believes we're going to have the Northwest is going to be all white and the Southeast is going to be all black. You're not into that, are you?
A completely free country where I would go to a state that proposed low.
All right, well, let's do this. You know, Plato wrote the Republic, which was his ideal state. Why don't you, Stephen, sit down and write your Republic of your ideal nation? Thank you for the call. I'll be right back.
Savage.
You know, I just went on. I'm giving an example of why the newspapers are dying. You don't have to look any further than you go to the CNN website. Look at the headline, Alabama gunman trained to be a police officer. Anything these vermin can do to make police look bad, these filth will do. Anything these rat pieces of garbage can do to smear police, these vermin will do. Alabama gunman trained to be a police officer. The gunman responsible for the deadliest crime in Alabama's history trained briefly as a police officer. Armed with two assault rifles, two semi-automatic weapons, a handgun, and a shotgun, police said, full story. You know what I'd like to say to the reporter who wrote this? I pray to God that the night you're out walking, or you or your girlfriend or your boyfriend or your wife or your child is out walking, and that, God forbid, some assailant should try to touch one of you, I pray to God that you call the ACLU instead of 911. That's all I would ask you to do. Pick up a phone and dial the ACLU and ask one of those verminous lawyers you love so much to come and save you. This is an example of why the newspapers are dying. Wherever you turn, it's always an attack on everything decent, everything noble, and everything American. That's all you see day and night. Every day and every night, that's all you see. What's this story here? Bristol Palin and fiancé split. No kidding. I really lost a lot of listeners didn't like me. The minute I saw Palin introduced by McCain, I said, oh, my God, when McCain, the moron, went down the receiving line of Palin's relatives, I said they look like the perps on Cops. So a lot of listeners didn't understand why I said that. That was a disaster. She was picked to shaft this campaign. I mean, it wasn't bad enough that McCain was questionable because of his age. And look, the strongest calling card that McCain had was experience over inexperience. So how do they counter that? I'll tell you what, we'll pick a vice presidential candidate to go along with McCain who has less experience than Obama. That's all. So they pick Palin. And what's your foreign policy experience? Well, we can see Russia from the Aleutians. And then they introduced the family. I never saw anything like this. It looked like I was watching Cops at 10:30 at night. That's what I said on the show. So a lot of you got mad at me. But as Casey Stengel said, I call him the way I see him. So what's this one? Cafferty. Remember yesterday I called him D. Cafferty? I hate people like him. You know why? They fake it like they're the gruffy old newsman who's going to really give you like it is. Jack Cafferty. You hear? Here's Jack D. Cafferty, I call him. Like a toothless tiger, this guy. Oh, a new book on his alcohol. What is it about books they have to disclose that they were transvestites or alcoholics to get you to buy a book? Why is it that I don't have to talk about anything except my life, my childhood, and psychological nudity, and I've sold more books than bookstores could have sold? How is it that I've sold so many bestsellers without having to go down to the mattress of coming up with this filth? Cafferty, my belt. Jack, you really think somebody's going to read about your alcoholism and they're going to really sympathize with you? They see you for what you are. A burned-out old hack who says nothing. Much ado about nothing, Cafferty. This guy, Jack D. Cafferty, my God, that's who CNN uses as the fake gruff man who tells you the truth. That's my opinion. Anyway, it's one man's opinion. Let's see. I'm sounding off right now. Lawmaker wants to blur Google Earth. I said that the first day I watched Google Earth. You remember that Thanksgiving? That my son brought it to me, and I was on the air, and I said to you, I learned something called Google Earth. Do you remember that? The minute I went on it, I said this is going to be used by terrorists against our troops. It's going to be used by assassins to find victims. It's going to be used for all the wrong reasons. It should be barred, and the vermin who run Google should be stopped. Do you remember I said that? I said that the rats who run Google should not be permitted to do this. Don't you remember what I said to you? Just taking all this time for them to catch up with me? Good luck. As Panasonic used to say, they're slightly ahead of their time.
Savage.
Well, it came out that the earmarks are alive and well under the man with big ears named Obama. The man with very large ears has plenty of room for earmarks, and he lied to you with hope and change. He brought the most corrupt Congress to life on both sides of the aisle, and we learned today that one out of $4 going to Massachusetts is not really to create jobs, it's to burnish the legacy of the Kennedy family. And so that's it. Wake up and you find out that you're living in a nightmare. And now that we're living in this nightmare, the question is, what do you do about the nightmare? That's what we're talking about on the Savage Nation. What I want to do for you right now is talk about dissent. And the other day, I talked about Obama and dissent, because I believe this man is a dictator. He's an infant dictator. He's just crawling so far with 17 such decrees, ruling by decree and by edict rather than by the democratic process that has taken this nobody and turned him into the most important man on earth. And if this man is not straightened out by the American people, you're not going to have a country, not in 4 years, but far less than 4 years. He is an out of control, runaway narcissist. And I fear for the freedoms of this country themselves. Now, of course, this is only one man's opinion. I agree with, I certainly would agree with that. And it's only one man who fears the loss of his freedom. That's me. I want to play for you my statement from the other day on Obama and dissent. Listen.
I don't know.
You know what the evidence of a true democracy is? Loud, forceful disagreement in the political marketplace. When you hear no loud political discourse, you know you're living in a dictatorship. When you hear the amen corner agreeing with everything the president does, you know that it's over and the republic has died. As long as you can hear voices saying, I disagree with you, Barack Obama. I think you're terrible. I think you stink. I think you're wrong. I think you're crazy. Then you know you still live in America. You still live in America where there's a hope, where we can still have political discourse. The day it becomes illegal or immoral or dangerous to disagree with a president is the day you've lost your freedoms, my friend. So stay tuned, because I am a lightning rod of change. I am a lightning rod of hope. I am a lightning rod of disagreement. I am a lightning rod of the changes that you are hoping for, which is a change for the better rather than a change for the worse. Sure, he's giving us change, but this is not the change that most Americans want. And I would say even those who voted for this college professor did not expect so much radical left-wing activism so quickly. Sure, they expected something other than George Bush or that sad old man John McCain, but they didn't expect the neo-Marxist agenda to be forced down their throat. That's not what they voted for. It's all a lie. I want to digress for a few moments because I've been hammering you pretty hard on this issue for a few hours now. I've had conversations with some strangers over the last few days, and I found out that I have listeners where I never knew I had them. I knew I had listeners far and wide, and I knew that the listeners ranged all over the economic scale and all over the ethnic scale and all over the political scale. And I also knew that I had many listeners behind prison bars, and that's because people who are trapped behind prison bars have very few options to exercise their minds. Many of the people behind prison bars never had formal education. Many of the people behind prison bars never had the opportunity to read and to try to understand for themselves what is going on. And they find my show, they may at the beginning not have understood, they might have said he's the biggest A-you-know-what in the world, but after they've listened to me for a while, they start to say, you know what, this guy makes sense on this, he makes sense on that. And they've heard me say that all of us are one mistake away from being locked up in this country. You've heard me say it. We have more people in prison proportionate to the overall population than any country on earth, and that's a very sad statistic. There are over 1 million people locked up behind bars, sometimes for minor infractions. No one is arguing that we should have tiers for the murderer, the rapist, the pornographer, the counterfeiter, the terrorist. No one is saying that. But there are too many people behind bars in this country, and they're thirsting and they're hungering for something from the American media other than talking about breasts and panties. Somebody talking about something other than a hockey puck flying into a cage. Somebody talking about something other than a moron swinging his arms and hitting a ball. They want to hear something about their life and the meaning of life and why they're behind bars and what they're going to do with their life when they get out from behind bars and how they can make a meaning out of their lives. And I am talking to you if you are in a prison cell or on a Gulf Stream. And I know I'm talking to you if you're behind a prison bar or on a Gulf Stream or in a Chevy or in a Prius. Why? Why do I exist? I exist, my friend, because you want me to exist. If you didn't want me to exist, I wouldn't be here. The reason I exist is because you need me. The reason you need me is because there's a desert out there. There's a desert in the American media, and I am wandering in this desert with you, not trying to make the Red Sea part, but trying to make you see within this Red Sea that you are a part of this sea of life. And this discussion today, if we never have another discussion about this, and I don't know that we will, I often don't get this worked up, but I'm very worked up because I have seen what happens with people who want to do good and where it can lead to. Watch out for the do-gooders. The do-gooders will nail you to a cross faster than you can say Roy Rogers. And they will do it in the name of progress. They will do it in the name of advancement. They will do it in the name of helping you, but you will be hanging from that cross and begging for mercy nevertheless. I am telling you that embryonic stem cell research is not a noble endeavor. It is the exact opposite. I am also telling you that adult stem cells hold as much, if not more, promise. And the only reason this college professor acting as president, with a stroke of the pen today, said to you, we are going to have embryonic stem cell research again, is because he's paying back yet another constituency, which is the abortion racket. The abortion racketeers have broken the champagne open today and are still celebrating as I speak, because they are going to make new fortunes again.
Savage.
This whole myth of Rahm being this tough guy, mean, is just not true. You know, at least once a week, he spends time teaching profanity to underprivileged children.
That's the young Obama while he was still climbing up the greasy pole of politics. All right, he told a joke. Rahm Emanuel from when that was, I don't know. Is that an old one? Yeah, a couple of months, right. Palin's daughter and boyfriend break up. Oh, that's real big news. That's really going to make me lose sleep. Court says no mercury warnings on tuna cans. Another big myth of the radical left. You know, I mean, I've trained in science and the tuna nonsense. I've lived on tuna all my life. I still live on tuna. If I don't eat tuna once a day, I don't feel right. It must be the mercury. Again, everything's a scare tactic. Don't eat meat, it's got the hormones. Eat fish, but don't eat this fish. Don't eat that fish because that has mercury lowered down the food scale, but eat up the... What do they want you to do? Eat insects? They want you to start eating bugs, then they'll be happy. The green people in the Obama administration, bugs only. Bug Thursday. To go with our mental state, we're going to eat bugs on Thursdays. The bug luncheon at the White House. Who was this? Which moron wanted labels of mercury on a can of fish? Who knows? Justice this, justice that, whack jobs. The state attorney general had sought a public health warning on the Prop 65. Oh, California again. You know, I'm out of the state for a while. I feel liberated. I feel like I've left the prison camp. I found that even the birds of Northern California were boring me. I know it's hard to say. I mean, I love birds. I was getting bored by the birds of Northern California. They were just beyond comprehension boring. The whole Northern California is like in a spiral, a death spiral. And I know when this started, I moved there in 74. It was a dynamic, great place, full of life, full of wildness, full of creativity. And then what happened was the militant homosexual movement took over the mind of the entire Bay Area, where people walk around afraid to say anything for fear they're offending somebody. You know, it's unbelievable to me. The whole area is like sinking into the mud. Anyway, good. Their loss is the gain of somewhere, wherever I am. Portland, Oregon, KXL. Michael, welcome. What's on your mind?
Yeah, Dr. Savage, I am a leftist, and I disagree with virtually everything you say. But the reason I listen to you on talk radio is because your arguments are articulate, well thought out, and I think most importantly, sincere. I really appreciate it that you don't just regurgitate the sound bites from the Republican Party. And I think
no, I don't. But you see, look, I understand that I'm not going to convince you to believe in what I say or believe in my way. But I know also that most, let us say, sincere activists on the other side are just as frightened of an overbearing government as am I. Would you say that that's true? Can we agree on that?
Absolutely.
All right. So the day they take away my freedom of expression, you're next. And you understand that as well. You do or you don't?
No, I do agree, absolutely.
No, I would if I were a left-winger. What do you think? You'd celebrate the ending of talk radio today. You'd be next tomorrow on the internet. And that's why they stopped attacking the golfer, because it was backfiring on the Obama minions. Their own party was saying enough is enough.
Well, I think you're the gadfly to the party on the left. I mean, I think it's really important. I mean, you know, Socrates would agree. We need people like you to make our positions more honed and more intelligent on this side.
Well, you need people like me in order to make certain that the drink that you're preparing for me is of the proper potency. Well, look, I was young once and foolish and thought that the left-wing way had some truth. I was once a youngster, and you get older, you start to see things differently. But I would bet, Michael, that you had somebody or have somebody in your family along the lines of Michael Savage.
Family is, I would even say they're probably libertarians, but they don't subscribe to a particular party.
Right. But you're young. Are you still young or are you over 40?
I'm 29.
Well, you're still young. Most young people tend to tilt toward the left, and they voted for Obama because they didn't want the old ways, and they didn't want McCain because they knew he was a continuation of Bush, and I felt the same way. But you can't really sit there, Michael, and I'm not here to pick an argument with you. You've been nice enough. That you don't think Obama lied to you. You can't really believe that.
I voted for Obama. I have felt betrayed by Obama, especially my primary reason for voting for him was he was promising to withdraw the troops from Iraq, and now he's talking about keeping them there. So especially with that.
Listen, when it happened, remember 2 weeks ago I said I'm shocked he's moving the troops from Iraq to Afghanistan, but what, that's going to be a war that the left agrees with?
Right.
It's like a shell game here. You got to ask yourself, what's in it for the Democrats that they want troops in Afghanistan? Let us put aside any security considerations for the moment and be very cynical together. I kept criticizing Bush and hammering him because I was saying it was all about contracts at a certain point. And I was relentless on this contract business in Iraq. You know that if you listen to the show. Now, I suspect that the same thing is going to go on in Afghanistan. When I heard from a returning Iraq veteran that meals, which in the past had been prepared by army cooks, in other words, an enlisted guy would be a cook, another would be a tailor, another would work in the laundry. I heard that a division of Halliburton was providing the meals, and every time a guy lined up for a meal, the government was billed $16. And if he went back for refills, they got billed $16 again. It confirmed my worst suspicions, Michael.
Well, you look for who benefits. Yeah, I don't see a clear benefit to the American people for staying in that unwinnable war.
So, but what do you feel about Obama saying that while he's against the earmarks, he's for them?
Well, like you said, it is double talk. It's newspeak, and it confirms my worst fears. I got to admit, I was...
Uh-oh, now you're in trouble, Michael. I hope your friends are not listening to this interchange. You're going to lose some friends after this.
I don't think so. I think most of my friends feel the same way. We were counting on them for actual change, and sending troops to Afghanistan, just like you
said.
No,
but it's not only business as usual. It's worse than business as usual. How do you guys feel about, you're younger than me by many decades, how do you feel about you're inheriting a budget mess that you'll never pay off? What do you think is going to happen to you when you're 50?
I doubt there'll be as many entitlements as there are now, that's for certain. I'm afraid of how Social Security is going to collapse.
Well, let me ask you, as a young leftist who's honest enough to have a discussion with me without screaming and yelling, how do you feel about illegal aliens getting jobs in the so-called Porculus Bill? Doesn't that bother you?
Well, yeah, I'm not a leftist in the sense that I think we should open our borders and teach everyone Spanish. I'm a leftist more on social issues, more just on personal freedoms. But as far as the illegal alien
thing, it sounds like you're more of a libertarian in that regard.
Yeah, a bit so. But as far as the illegal alien thing, I've agreed with you since the moment I turned on your show that it's...
Uh-oh, right, Michael, I don't know. I sense that you know the old joke. You know, if you're not a liberal at 20, you have no heart. If you're still a liberal at 40, you have no mind.
Winston Churchill.
Is that who said it?
Yep.
You're pretty literate. How about the one, I don't know who made this one up. What do you call a liberal with two children?
Oh, I don't know.
A Republican. What do you call a liberal with four children?
I don't know.
A fascist.
That's funny.
I'm joking. No, I mean, you know, the world changes. Michael, you're a good-natured guy. I'm going to send you a free copy of Psychological Nudity in a plain brown wrapper so that your friends don't see it arriving on your doorstep. So, stay on the line. Let's send the guy a free book. By the way, and this is amazing, I have now only about 700 copies left. I actually have to go to reprint. I don't know what's happened, but it's selling again. I don't hammer the book. I don't sell it. I reached my quota. What I wanted to do, I wanted to put the book out, I did. And you haven't heard me push it or read from it, you know, but I am going to tell you that we're only down to about 750, 800 copies, and it's selling a certain number every day, which is nice, because more and more people are going to enjoy reading about all of those wonderful stories. 1-800-449-8255 is the phone number. Giovanni, San Francisco, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yes, sir, doctor. I'd just like to say I haven't called in since the election. I've been in a total funk. I want to see you run for office. I want to see you there. You can speak across the aisle. Everyone enjoys you. You do bring up great topics. I mean, let's get this going.
The reason that the left wing, the real left wingers, not the ideologues, but younger people like the last caller like me, is they sense that I know what I'm talking about from my perspective. I believe in what I'm talking about. And I'm not reading Republican talking points, as does the golfer, for example.
Exactly, sir. I still want to see you.
No, and I really don't go for the guys who just do the same double talk every day because it's boring. I could do it. I could probably have a larger audience if I did it. I don't know. It doesn't matter to me. I don't even think about the audience anymore. I'm sorry to tell you. I don't even give a thought to ratings. Because if you start thinking about ratings, you wind up like one of these creeps like Jon Stewart who needs a writer in order to stay on the air. Or worse than him, the lowest of the gutter slime, this guy Bill Maher. These guys are not funny. They read stuff written by more intelligent, funnier men. Let them try radio for about an hour and you'll see how funny they really are.
Absolutely.
There's a comedian who switched over with a beer name. It's sad to listen to him. He sounds like a nice enough guy. But this guy's not made for talk radio. He sounds like his Aunt Ruth, you know, with a megaphone. Who else am I going to say something negative? Boycott tuna. Why are people negative about tuna? I don't understand this. There's naturally occurring methylmercury in the environment. There's naturally occurring asbestos all over the state. There's naturally occurring cyanide in many places. There's also lightning, lead. There's bears. There's mountain lions. What is wrong with these psychos who think that you can eliminate every danger on Earth through government intervention? I have eaten tuna fish, I would say, 5 days a week ever since I'm, I don't know, in college, 18 years old. Now, you could say, all right, that explains your mental state. I understand that. I opened myself up for that. But I'm a big enough guy to say that's not the reason I am the way I am this way, because that's the way I am. I believe in what I'm saying because I think the facts will prove me right. Tomorrow, Madoff will plead guilty to all charges. Yeah, he'll plead guilty. And Ruthie, Ruthula, darling Ruthula, the lovely wife, the two kids from Queens who went astray. We really should. I could just wait and hear the judge when he sentences. Judge Chin, the federal judge, is gonna sentence him. And that's he's not to be confused with Big Chin Gigante, the judge. Although I suspect, but the fact is, a Judge Chin, a federal judge in New York, is going to hear tomorrow the plea, and in a couple of months, when a bomb goes off somewhere, he'll give the sentence and you'll forget who Madoff is. Madoff will be in Palm Beach with a white hat walking around with a walker and an attendant, and they'll tell you that he's been released for his own recognizance because he's already made his Boy Scouts, and they gave to the UJA, and everyone's happy again, and he gave back to him, and he's going to give speeches to young children on how to not rob ever again. With getting caught, he's going to give them talks on how to rob and not get caught. in order to make certain they can become good politicians. But we're not going to get the justice we want. This guy should be put in a pillory on 42nd Street and Broadway so people can throw garbage at him for 5 hours a day, and then he should be brought back to Rikers Island to clean the toilets for the rest of his natural, unnatural life.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Obama once promised America that he would put an end to earmarks. Well, today he opposes their elimination and signed a bill which contains only 9,000 earmarks. Let's listen to his words today.
Yesterday, Congress sent me the final part of last year's budget, a piece of legislation that rolls 9 bills required to keep the government running into 1, a piece of legislation that addresses the immediate concerns of the American people by making needed investments in line with our urgent national priorities. That's what nearly 99% of this legislation does. The nearly 99% that you probably haven't heard much about.
You got to be joking.
What you likely have heard about is that this bill does include earmarks. Now, let me be clear. Done right, earmarks have given legislators the opportunity to direct federal money to worthy projects that benefit people in their districts.
What?
And that's why I've opposed their outright elimination.
Now he opposes their outright elimination. Is that the kind of hope and change that you can really believe in? Liberals, what is the worst betrayal Obama has committed so far? Is it the earmark scandal? Is it sending more troops to Afghanistan? His compromising of American security by closing Gitmo? Which one? How about rage in America? Rage seems to be rampant in America. More people every day are snapping and becoming violent. Is this trend the result of a red diaper doper baby culture which for years has suppressed public anger, even though it's a natural human emotion? Or is it about drugs? Is it the Prozac drugs? What is the worst thing that you've ever seen happen as the result of anger or the lack of anger? Neo-Marxist hubris. You know, the dictionary defines hubris as exaggerated pride or exaggerated self-confidence. The Bible says that pride cometh before a fall. Well, pride came before the fall of the United States. Neo-Marxist pride. The Ponzi scheme artist Bernard Madoff was filled with the kind of neo-Marxist hubris I'm talking about. For 40 years, he prided himself on getting away with billions of invested dollars. Now you say, where is the Marxism in that? He was God, and they were the peasants. And to get those billions, he counted on the hubris of leftists who thought they were so much better than everybody else that they demanded not a 10% profit, not a 20% profit, but a profit, well, anyone that was better than their neighbor. And of course, they were so smart that nobody could ever cheat them. They knew better. Their hubris helped started the fall of America. And the hubris of Nancy Pelosi is helping to continue it. Not content with paying for her own airfare between Washington, D.C. and her house district in San Francisco, California, Nancy has demanded and received the use of military aircraft as her own personal air force. Not just for herself. According to sources, she's used it for her colleagues. She's even used our Air Force to shuttle her family, to shuttle them all across the country. She's exploiting her power because she's filled with the exaggerated pride and self-confidence that so many neo-Marxists derive from their mental disorder. They're above the law, you see, and the law can never touch them. They are a law unto themselves. And the hubris goes straight to the top. Barack Obama, he's about to sign a massive $410 billion spending bill with over 9,000 earmarks. Earmarks that he promised would not be there. Well, he claims the bill is imperfect, but says he's going to sign it anyway because it's necessary, because he knows he can get away with it. Exaggerated self-confidence, hubris. The mentality that got us into our current cultural, political, and economic decline is spelled out in these stories. They can't touch me. I can get away with anything. They'll never get wise. You see, but eventually people do get wise. You can fool all the people some of the time and some of the people all of the time, but you can't fool all of the people all of the time. Lincoln said it, but the neo-Marxists haven't learned it. We've talked about Obama being tested on all fronts and failing on each one. The tests from other countries are coming faster and faster. Iran and Russia flexing their muscles. Even the drug lords of Mexico are getting more brazen. North Korea is now testing the chosen one, threatening if the U.S. or South Korea shoots down its long-range missile test, which would be possible to strike our West Coast, they would see that as an act of war. Joining us today is K.T. McFarlane with ktmcfarlane.com to discuss the latest saber-rattling from the North Koreans.
Hi, Michael. You know what's really struck me about the last week is U.S. and South Korea. We have, as usual, every year, have military exercises with South Korea. And as usual, every year, when we do, North Korea condemns it, and they rattle the saber. But this year, the North Koreans are doing something a little different. They're also launching a long-range missile, the Taepodong 2 missile, that is capable of carrying nuclear weapons and has a long enough reach that if fired from Korea could hit the U.S. West Coast and Alaska. The North Koreans have also cut the emergency hotline with South Korea, and they've warned civilian aircraft flying in the Sea of Japan area that they could be in a potential war zone. The North has also said that if the United States shoots down its missile tests, they will consider it an act of war. Well, North Korea's always been a combination of bluster and brinksmanship, but there are some indications that we could have an escalating crisis this time around. First of all, North Korea is testing Obama. They're doing it in hopes of grabbing some economic and diplomatic concessions in any future negotiations, because you remember during the campaign, Obama said that he would sit down with any of the dictators, including the leader of North Korea, for direct man-to-man negotiations without preconditions. And it's especially so because the North Koreans are hurting. That last year, the new South Korean government cut off its annual aid to the North. So they're looking for some more assistance from somebody. The other thing is that North Korea really is hoping that this time around that long-range missile test will work. They tried it 2 years ago, but the Taepodong 2 fizzled right after it was fired from the launch pad. And the North Koreans were really, frankly, very embarrassed. So, could this crisis heat up? Could it lead to a war? I don't think that's likely. I mean, North Korea does not have the wherewithal to invade the South. Their conventional forces are not very good, and they're not very well equipped. So I don't think they're looking to invade South Korea. And I don't think they want to pick a fight with us. I think they want to score some bargaining points, but they don't want to pick a fight. And as long as we don't shoot down that missile test, if it is successful, there's no real cause for them to do anything. And even if that missile test is, in fact, a treaty violation, which it is. North Korea also can't afford to alienate China, which supplies their economic lifeline. You know, North Korea really doesn't do anything very well except make nuclear weapons. And China has to really support their people. I mean, it gives them fuel oil. It gives them gasoline. It really, without China, the North Koreans are literally shivering and in the dark. And the last thing China wants right now is some kind of a conflict on its border, because China is worried that with the economic downturn, they've got an awful lot of migrant workers with no jobs. The last thing they need is a horde of North Korean refugees over their border.
Well, do you think North Korea is looking for a war or just playing games?
I don't think North Korea is looking to pick a fight in a war, but what they do want is the political power that comes from being a nuclear power. They want the clout. So in a weird way, North Korea's greatest threat may not be its nuclear arsenal, but the nuclear program that it exports, especially to Iran. They have in the past aided Iran's nuclear program. They've helped them build nuclear reactors. They've helped them with missiles. And more recently, they've helped Iran with its satellite test programs. So to the point where Iran is now really on the threshold of having nuclear weapons. There are three things you need for a nuclear weapon, as you've talked about before. One, you need enriched uranium. Well, we know that Iran is doing that right now. Two, you need a missile. We know they've tested a missile, and the missile they've tested is based on the North Korean model. It's in Iran, it's called the Shahab-3. North Korea is called the Taipodong-2. The third thing that Iran needs is the blueprint of how to put it all together. How do you actually take the enriched uranium, put it on a missile, and make sure that it has an explosion? That we don't know whether they have, but we know that North Korea has aided Iran in the past. We know that Dr. A.Q. Khan, the Pakistani nuclear physicist, has also aided Iran. So when you look at the world situation, what's going to happen, I don't think it's an immediate crisis with North Korea. But what it does show is we've got to pay attention to North Korea, because what's North Korea doing next? Is it transferring enriched uranium, more reactor assistance, missile technology, and the blueprint for making a nuclear weapon? Is it doing that? Is it having those relations with Iran right now? So yet again, as with North Korea, as with Gaza, as with Israel, as with everything in the world, it seems these days, all roads lead back to Tehran and the Iranian nuclear program.
Thanks, KT. I said from the beginning that our college professor president was too green for this job. FDR brought us socialist programs, but at least he defended our country. This is the Savage Nation. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Morning. I saw a really sick story in the New York Post, and you say, well, why are you going to talk about it? I'll tell you why in a minute, but listen to the headline. Rockland rabbi found guilty of molesting daughter faces 50 years behind bars. Listen to this. A Hasidic rabbi, they're the most orthodox, from Rockland County was found guilty today of molesting his daughter and now faces 50 years in prison. Israel Weingarten, 59, was convicted in Brooklyn Federal Court of all five counts of transporting the now 27-year-old victim in and out of the country to commit sexual crimes against her. You see, the feds claim that he molested his daughter in Rockland and on trips to Israel and Belgium. Oh, it's disgusting. Acting as his own lawyer, Rabbi Weingarten, I love the word rabbi, which means teacher, Rabbi Weingarten delivered a rambling 1.5-hour closing argument to the jury on Tuesday, who at times during the trial appeared repulsed by his cross-examination of the victim. That's his daughter and other family members. During the trial, Weingarten said his daughter had a relationship with a married man in Belgium that led her to fabricate the charges against him. After the verdict this afternoon, his daughter, who has not been named by the New York Post because she's a victim of a sex crime, said her father asking her questions while she was on the stand was like being molested again. She added, I wish he wasn't my father. Now, the feds claim Rabbi Weingarten sexually abused his daughter, now age 27, starting in 1990 when she was only 9. Prosecutors said the abuse lasted until she was 16, and it took the jury just a day to believe that Weingarten committed the crimes. The trial has split the city's Satmar community, one faction believing the victim, and others claiming she's a liar. This is a really, really sick story. It shows that, you know, sickos can hide behind religion, you know. But what's interesting to me is that HBO will ridicule Christians in the form of Mormons, but they never criticize other religions. Isn't it interesting how the Hollywood vermin will attack Mormons and other Christians, but never, ever make mockery of Jews or Muslims or Buddhists or Hindus? Now, of course, they shouldn't mock any religion, but as you well know, there's only one religion that takes it, and that's the dominant religion in America. I wonder why. But, you know, you look at a story like this, you look at it and it says, Rockland rabbi found guilty of molesting daughter. It just shows that sickos can hide behind religion. They can hide behind no religion. They can hide behind who knows what they can hide behind. Anyway, there are far more important stories. Now, you got to listen to this clip 12. Here's Obama double talking on earmarks in clip 12.
What you likely have heard about is that this bill does include earmarks.
Yeah.
Now, let me be clear.
Sure.
Done right, earmarks have given legislators the opportunity to direct federal money to worthy projects that benefit people in their districts, and that's why I've opposed their outright elimination.
What a liar. I mean, come on, how much can you take? How much can you take? Here's a guy who ran on a platform of eliminating earmarks. I remember during the campaign, he even trapped me for a minute when he said, I will go through the new budget line by line, and I'll make sure that not one single earmark gets passed. I mean, how can you people look at yourself in the mirror? I just don't know how you can do this. I really don't understand it. I really don't understand how people can. I don't want to use the word liberal or this or that. How could you people who support this guy not see what he really is? You know what I mean? It's unbelievable to me. They're all the same, these politicians. They're all the same. 1 year ago this week, Barack Obama, then a senator from Illinois and presidential candidate, voted for a bill that would impose a one-year moratorium on earmarks. Here were his words at that time. Quote, we can no longer accept a process that doles out earmarks based on a member of Congress's seniority rather than the merit of the project. We can no longer accept an earmarks process in which many of the projects being funded fail to address the real needs of our country, close quote. Yet today, the anointed one signed into law a spending bill with over 9,000 earmarks. Here are a few of them. How about $713,000 for a biomass project in New York for Chuck Schumer's filthy backyard? How about $951,000 Sustainable Development Fund in Las Vegas for Harry Reid's front yard? Or are they Harry Reid's friends? How about $143,000 for Las Vegas Natural History Museum? Ha! Also for Harry Reid. $238,000 for the Polynesian Voyaging Society in Honolulu for Daniel Inouye, another wonderful gentleman. And wait, $381,000 for jazz at Lincoln Center. Now, that's a job creator. Well, that's for Gerald Nadler. You know Gerald Nadler, the slim fella. Jazz at Lincoln Center. How many jobs is that going to create, Obama? Wait, it gets better. The U.S. government is unable to break its earmark addiction. Obama, though he once swore off using them, has apparently fallen off the wagon. And so have the so-called conservative Republicans. They got a pretty nice haul, too. You think they're out of it? No. Senator Richard Shelby, Republican Alabama, got $114 million in earmarks. That's how they got the Republican votes. Senator Thad Cochran, Republican Mississippi, got $75 million. Senator Mitch McConnell got $51 million for the bluegrass state. And the backstabbing Senator Allinspector, the turncoat, he got $25 million for Pennsylvania. So you see, it doesn't matter whether you're talking about Democrats or Republicans. The system is corrupt. The graft is bipartisan. I'll be right back. Here's what's on MichaelSavage.com today. Let's start from the bottom. Is Bernie Madoff a Bonnie and Clyde team? He and his wife, Ruthie, the doll with the nice smile. You see, Bernie Madoff's wife, Ruth, although she's still innocent, is now an object of the investigation, according to federal authorities, probing her husband's billion-dollar Ponzi scheme. Old smiling Ruthie, two kids from Queens. Also, MSNBC poll, yes, you heard it, left-wing MSNBC, or shall we call it MSLVGT, always far left all the time. They ran a poll, and according to their poll, Obama, their hero, has earned an F on performance less than 2 months into the White House. Oh, yeah, I guess you can fool all of the people some of the time, but you can't even fool all the leftists all of the time. And Obama has opened the door to Castro's communist prison state, according to Reuters. That's right. The Senate, under Obama's pressing, passed a bill that would relax some limits on contacts with Cuba. Isn't that wonderful? Bring in more communists to America. Reward Castro. Under the leadership of the phony Republican Arnold Schwarzenegger, California is bankrupt. Even the latest rounds of tax hikes won't be enough to cover the state's out-of-control spending when they refuse to look at the major problems causing the economic collapse, the largest, of course, being the illegal alien epidemic, like locusts running across the state services. Governor Arnold has not done anything that he has promised to do when he first ran for office, and things seem to be getting worse rather than better. Joining us now is Jeff Kuhner with the Washington Times to talk about this wonderful state.
Thanks, Michael. My topic this week is on California, and in particular, the governor, Arnold Schwarzenegger. California is on the verge of economic collapse. And what you are now seeing in California, I believe, is the future of the United States. Here was a man who rode into power on a recall vote in 2003, pledging to clean up the state. He was a new kind of Republican. He was supposedly socially liberal, but fiscally conservative. He was going to take on the public employee unions. He was going to take on the trial lawyers, the environmentalists, all of the left-wing special interest groups that have driven California into the ground. Yet over the last 6 years, what we have seen clearly and unequivocally, and the capstone of that was the recent scam of a budget agreement, is that Schwarzenegger has been exposed as a massive fraud and a massive phony. Taxes have now gone up. Income taxes, sales taxes, retail taxes, you name it, they have all gone up. But more than that, Michael, he has failed to hold the line on spending and on the budget deficit. Throughout the last 4 to 5 years, the government of California has swelled by over 40% since Gray Davis was in power. That is a shocking rise in big government. And here, Schwarzenegger, I believe, should be held accountable by the people of California. For this simple reason, California is now on the verge of bankruptcy. It cannot pay its deficit. Its deficit is now out of control. Government spending is out of control. Taxes are out of control. But more than that, Michael, what we are now seeing in California is a civilizational collapse, a cultural, economic, and political collapse, a collapse of confidence and a collapse of will. For as the economy has tanked, as California's now unemployment rate shoots up to nearly 10%, the fourth highest in the nation, as businesses flee California, as middle-class households flee California, there has been an onslaught of illegal and legal immigration, third world immigration. Los Angeles, especially East Los Angeles, is now essentially a Spanish-speaking part of the United States. You go in all kinds of cities across California, up and down the coast, drugs are now rampant. Crime is soaring. There are frequent gang fights and shootings. Parts of Los Angeles you cannot even enter into. Slowly, piece by piece, California is becoming Mexifornia. It is now no longer resembling the United States, but Mexico. And as this has gone on, Schwarzenegger has been silent. He has allowed the liberal special interest groups to derail his economic agenda. And to me, Michael, what I found most outrageous is that in 2004, I will never forget this, I was in New York City at the Republican National Convention. To a man and woman, from CNN to Fox News to MSNBC to the New York Times, everybody was hailing Arnold Schwarzenegger, the governor, as the hero of the Republican Party, as somebody who would take the Republicans out of the wilderness. Here was a liberal Republican that would appeal to professionals, suburbanites, independents, a new face on the party, somebody as well as Rudy Giuliani and other liberal moderate Republicans, that these people were the future of the Republican Party. And now, 5 years later, the liberal Republicans have shown themselves to be the frauds and the cowards that they are. And it is not just Arnold Schwarzenegger. You look at Olympia Snowe. You look at Arlen Specter. You look at Susan Collins. All of these rhinos, Republicans in name only, who backed the recent stimulus package. And here is what you find out about them and about the likes of Schwarzenegger. They don't care about cutting government spending. They are not budget hawks. That is a huge lie. For them, the only thing they care about is to raise taxes. Because if they can sign off on a $1 trillion stimulus package, if they can rack up mountains of debt and bury the American people in deficits for generations to come, then they are not serious about tackling budget deficits, they are not serious about rolling back big government, and they are not serious about protecting the American taxpayer. What they're interested in is one thing and one thing only, and that is power. And if you want to understand the likes of Schwarzenegger or Olympia Snow or Arlen Specter, all they care about is keeping themselves in power. What they want to do is they want to split the difference. They want to position themselves between the right and the left and somehow kowtow to the mainstream media and say, look at us. We're pro-abortion. We're pro-environment. We're pro-education. We're pro-gay rights. We're a different kind of Republican. No, they're not. What they are is something else. They are Democrats in sheep's clothing. They are masquerading as Republicans. But underneath them, what they fundamentally are whores. They are political opportunists and mercenaries. And they will say and do whatever it takes to remain in power. They have no overriding or fundamental principles. They cannot roll back the state. They cannot cut taxes. And most importantly, Michael, to me, this says everything I need to know about Schwarzenegger or Specter or Olympia Snow. If you cannot stand up for the sacredness of marriage between a man and a woman, if you cannot stand up against the myth and the sham that is global warming, then to me, you are nothing. If you cannot stand up to trendy Hollywood and the forces of cultural liberalism that are destroying this country piece by piece, day by day, then to me, you are nothing. And that is why, Michael, I'll be very frank with you. I am not surprised that Schwarzenegger cannot stand up to the public employee unions or the trial lawyers or the environmentalists or the gay rights advocates or the abortion lobby. Because if he cannot stand up to these people, how the hell can he stand up for the American taxpayer? This is the fundamental problem confronting Arnold Schwarzenegger. His agenda was derailed because he cannot stand up to liberal special interest groups, whether it be on the cultural front or on the economic front. And the result is that California is now an economic basket case. Arizona, Nevada, New Mexico are benefiting from the capital and people flight that is now occurring in California. And within the next 20 to 30 years, English will become a second language in California. Businesses will completely disappear. Unemployment will continue to soar. And we will have on our hands a third world state, a state that is no longer recognizable as anything fundamentally American. And the question that I have for all the conservatives in California and for all the people of California is, why did you not make your stand? Why did you not speak out against a fraud and a shyster like Arnold Schwarzenegger? Why did you not push for a recall and say, no, we will defend our businesses and our middle class people. We will defend our taxes and the fruits of our labor. And most importantly, we will defend the sovereign territory of the United States. We are not some third world banana republic where people from other countries can just come in and go as they please and then use up our social services and use up our education, our schools, our hospitals, and our welfare. This is not the United States that I know of. We are a country built on the rule of law. And I'm sorry, maybe this works in Mexico, but not here in California. California was once the golden state. 150 years ago, the saying in America was, go west, young man. That is where you can stake your fortune. California was the land of gold and whiskey and opportunity and businesses and making a fortune for yourself and creating a family and a home. Today, it is an economic and cultural wasteland. It is slowly dying. It is being strangulated and starved to death by the forces of liberalism that are bankrupting that state day after day, week after week. And rather than stand up to these liberal special interest groups, Schwarzenegger, the actor, the governator, the Hollywood playboy, stands there and all he wants to do is be famous. Well, he may be personally popular, and the chattering classes may still love him, and his Hollywood degenerate friends may still love him. But as a governor, he has been an absolute failure. Like all liberal Republicans, he has been an absolute failure. And this is why I say to the people of California, you have one option and one option only. Push for a recall. Terminate the Terminator. I'm Jeff Kooner at the Washington Times with his weekly special report for the Savage Nation. Thanks, Michael, and back to you.
Thanks, Jeff. That's certainly food for thought, not just for California, but for the rest of the country as well. This is the Savage Nation.
Savage.
months ago, Lawrence Lemer was on talking about his book, Madness Under the Royal Palms. He's a best-selling author and joined us today to talk about his book, which looked into the mindset of the Palm Beach crowd that Bernie Madoff was able to con. Since his visit to our show, not only has his book sold well, but his life has been threatened by the very people that he wrote about in his book. Lawrence, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
Hey, Mike, you're the man. It's just terrific being on your show again. I can't think of anything better.
What's been happening to you since the book has been out?
Well, my book, Madness Under the Royal Palms, is a big success, but there's been a lot of controversy about it. The police chief said my life might be in danger and I should have security. I was with a French television team, and we were driving in the north end of the island next to the Palm Beach Country Club, and my car was run off the road. I did an interview with local NBC television here, and somebody on the street came up and started screaming at me and calling me all these names. So it's been quite... Sometimes people hype their books by saying they're controversial, and this time I've had a little bit more controversy than I wanted.
The police chief told you to get a bodyguard?
Yeah, no, when the police chief told me this, I thought he was joking. But he wasn't joking. The people are that upset. This book, it so much gets underneath the skin and catches the essence of this place that it's very upsetting to some people. Not to most people, but to some people are extremely upset with it.
Why do you think that is?
I think because, okay, first of all, it depends. Some of the people the most upset are the Jewish residents, or some of the Jewish residents of Palm Beach. Because if you look at the history of Palm Beach, if you were Jewish for most of the history of Palm Beach, you could only go to one hotel, you could go to one beach club, you could go to one country club, and you were really not welcome. And so more and more wealthy Jews started coming to Palm Beach. They weren't let into the two exclusive clubs, the Bath and Tennis and the Everglades, so they formed their own club. And what did they do? But they replicated those WASP clubs, and not necessarily the best part of those clubs. That they're just as snobbish as the WASP are, and they don't like, if you're Jewish and don't know the money or they don't think your class is there, they're going to have nothing to do with you. So they really thought that they were this new elite in Palm Beach, and at precisely the point when Palm Beach, now the majority is Jewish, my book comes out and the Madoff scandal comes out. And my book looks, you know, accurately at all these groups. It's not exactly loving of the WASP either, but they are very upset that this book looks intimately at their lives. And the Madoff thing, it's as if they've struggled so hard for success to be the majority on this island. They're so generous to charity. I mean, the museums and the cultural centers are predominantly Jewish money, Jewish philanthropies. And then here comes this book, and here comes Madoff, and it's as if this is not what we want. This is not how we want to be viewed.
Give us some idea how the Madoff scandal is affecting life down in Palm Beach.
Well, the Madoff scandal has had impact in several ways. One is just the people that are so terribly hurt. Now, you know, if somebody, a billionaire who loses $100 million, I could care less. But you have a widow whose husband said on a deathbed, "Darling, give all your money to Bernie. That's the safe thing." And now she's destitute. How can any human being have anything less but deep feelings for that kind of person? So on the one level, the people that have to sell their homes, the people that are auctioning off their belongings. On the second level, people that really weren't hurt, but psychologically they're hurt, that here is this disgusting person who has exploited the Jewish people. And it's basically an affinity scam. If he were Greek and he cheated Greeks, we would say it were Greeks. And this is overwhelmingly a Jewish story. And a lot of people don't like to see it that way, but that's the way it is.
You feel threatened, really?
Look, I mean, I'm an author. That's, I mean, to me, but, you know, I was at a party the other night up on the roof in West Palm Beach, and there were two of the characters in my book were there who weren't happy, and I was scared. I mean, I thought, am I going to get thrown off the roof? I mean, it's not a sleazy, nasty book. It's just a truthful book about the lives of Palm Beach, and that's why I'm sort of so stunned at the impact it's had.
How is the book doing now?
So it's on the New York Times extended list. It has been for 4 weeks. Madness Under the Royal Palms is the biggest selling book in South Florida in 40 years. I mean, you go into these bookstores. I have to go in and sign books every 3 or 4 days. It's just a phenomena. Everywhere you walk on this island and around this part of Florida, you just see people with this book under their arms. It just, I don't know, it just has had this impact because nobody's ever written about this place. I mean, it's such a strange, intimidating place that you come over here and if you're not, you don't belong here. I mean, you come drive down I-95, you better know how to get here because there's no sign saying Palm Beach. And once you find your way over here, here are these hedges and everything's hidden behind the hedges and where's the life and what do these people do? It's just the strangest place I've ever seen.
What do you have planned?
Well, I'm going a very far afield from this. I was a Peace Corps volunteer in Nepal in the 60s, and it's going to be the 50th anniversary of the Peace Corps, so I want to go back to Nepal, and I want to write about how Nepal has changed, how I've changed, and this incredible group of people I was involved with, including a woman, Suzanne Cluett, who was with me in Nepal, and she was the first employee of the Gates Foundation when Bill Gates is senior, and Suzanne really started it out of Suzanne's basement, and she died a couple of years of a brain tumor, and we built a school in eastern Nepal in her honor, and I want to go back there and visit that school.
You told me over the weekend you were surprised by the reach that the Savage Nation has.
No, I'm a one-man gallop poll, okay? I've been promoting this book. It came out on the 20th of January. I've done it. You name the program, I've done it. You name the television program, I've done it. And the one thing that has had the biggest impact is your program. And I am astounded at the people that listen. I don't mean that to sound, you know, less than complimentary. It's just I had no idea. Everywhere I go, people come up to me. I listen to the Savage Nation every night, and they didn't tell me that. So, it's not just that people listen to it. They really think that themselves that they're part of this something beyond listening to a program, and it has an extraordinary impact. And believe me, I'm a believer.
Well, when you say people, do you mean a certain type of person?
No, it's a full spectrum. I mean, there's the guy that runs the dry cleaner that I go to all the time. I mean, he doesn't miss it. There's a retired teacher. He doesn't miss it. I just played tennis this morning at the Seaview Tennis Courts. The maintenance guy comes up to me. He listens to it all the time. He listened to me. And big business people have come up to me and say they listen. So I don't think there's not a stereotypical listener. I mean, it's just an extraordinarily diverse group of people, and it's like this underground nation, basically.
Well, I've always said my listeners are the smartest in all of talk radio. Lawrence Lima, thanks for being on the Savage Nation, and please take care of yourself.
Thanks again. It's always a delight talking to you.
This is the Savage Nation.
Savage.